Welcome back to the Sports Ticket here on this Friday, May the 7th. Time to talk Royals baseball, joined by former Royal. And I tell you, he's a guy that's very busy. In fact, he was so busy yesterday that he had knee surgery. Actually, it was Wednesday, and now he's ready to go on the radio. So he is a gamer. Les Norman, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing good, man. My orthopedic surgeon is one of my best friends, and he would not let me just sit. So he's already got me, even with crutches, walking on my leg within 24 hours and getting back to work. So, yeah, there's no rest for the weary, I guess.
Is it just wear and tear from sports and growing up, or is it something that you did recently that caused you to have to do that?
I think it was the wear and tear of it, and, you know, just over time I had torn my meniscus and then had some other stuff go on, and I think he might have pulled a bunch of loose bodies that shouldn't be in a human being's knee. So, yeah, I think it's over wear and tear over time, but it just got to the point where coaching both my boys, and, you know, I'm very active and I exercise every day and, you know, leading practices and all that, so I put it off. And I paid for it a little bit, but still, we're on the good side of it, so it's all good.
Well, Les, if you don't know, he was here in Beloit not too long ago for the Methodist Men and Boys Rally. We had a chance to get to know Les in person and did a great job speaking with the kids in the schools. He's a motivational speaker, author, does some sports talk himself as well. Do you still have your unique show there on 810 WHB, Breaking the Norm? Is that still going?
I do, man. We've been going for, gosh, been 11 years now, so doing that, and it's also a podcast, and then with COVID we couldn't do it, but now on this side of it in 2021 I'm back to covering the Royals for Spectrum Sports, which is our cable channel here in Kansas City, so I'm on TV as well, and then I also run the podcast at our church called the Watching World Podcast, so there's all kinds of radio and TV going on.
Yeah, you're busy, and it makes it fun, and it makes it fun when the Royals are playing well, and they were there for a while, but now they have hit the skids. They've lost 5 in a row, 6 of 7. But as I was talking with Dusty about this a little while ago before we brought you on the air, Les, if somebody would have told you before the season after 30 games the Royals would be one game out of first, you would have taken it, right?
Yeah, we absolutely would have. And this is one of those situations where we got spoiled early, and so people oftentimes, as anybody would do, tend to hitch their wagon to this is how it's going to be all year. But you have to remember it's a 162 game season now, and you have to really understand over the long haul what the team is. And every team is going to go through rough times like they are right now. Every team is going to go through good streaks like they were, but eventually what you are is going to come out, and there's a certain level of pitching that we're going to be. Danny Duffy was not going to go through a whole season with a .39 earned run average. And we weren't going to win 5 out of every 6. It's just, this is not that team. And so I think you're starting to see a little bit, still early, but a little bit of this thing leveling off to see what the Royals really are.
You know, it's interesting because the Royals there for a stretch, they were 6-0 in one-run games. Without Salvi, they might not have won 3 or 4 of those games. And people are talking about run differential, which, you know, usually tells a bit of a story. Although there are times where teams, you know, win all those close games, get blown out a handful of times over 162 games, that can be a misleading stat. I believe that you make your own luck. You make your own breaks. In a 162-game season, it's a marathon, not a sprint. Every team's going to go through a skid. It's just a matter of trying to minimize the damage when you kind of hit that type of slump, just like a hitter, just like a pitcher, and then, of course, what the Royals are going through. Would you agree with all of that?
I absolutely would agree. And I think the most glaring statistic that you can't measure is the mental part of the game.
Yeah.
And these are the storms that you have to weather, and this game is fickle, and you're going to feel like you're going to win with relative ease in some streaks, and then you're going to go through times like, I mean, we didn't have our second hit until what, the 7th or 8th inning yesterday.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to emotionally and especially mentally weather the storm, not get too caught up in the highs, not get too beat up by the lows, and just continue to make adjustments. I mean, this big league thing, man, hitters get hot, pitchers figure you out, they adjust, then you got to adjust to their adjustment, and it just goes back and forth. But how mentally strong you are is usually will dictate what teams are there standing at the end.
I still think the two toughest sports to do mentally is baseball and golf. I mean, there's just so much time for you to think, you know? I mean, there's just too much time for your brain to operate, right?
There is. And, you know, with golf, it never ends. Yes. I mean, there's that quick little swing, the ball's not moving. And so I think golf can be mentally a little bit more difficult than baseball. Because baseball, you got things going on. There's a lot of different things going on in defense and in offense and all that. But in both, you are thinking about what you have to do. You're trying to get the muscle memory down of the swing, even though the swings are different. There's still a swing involved, and you're trying to duplicate it. You're trying not to get too stressed. You're trying to have good timing and tempo. In baseball, you have to add a timing to get your foot down to see the ball and then have the timing of your swing. So there's so much that goes up to, that leads up to the 0.4 seconds of a baseball swing and all the preparation that's got to be done. And if you're not strong in your mind, this will be a game that will eat you alive.
Former Kansas City Royal Les Norman, syndicated sports radio host, TV analyst, motivational speaker, author, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. What do you think? I mean, it's a combination of things. I get that. But what do you think is the biggest issue for the Royals right now during their struggles?
Well, you've got a lot of options as a pitcher, but I think right now it's the offensive inconsistency. It's not the only glaring issue. But when you have a lineup like this, I mean, you've got Soler who's back under 200. You've got, even though he's hitting a lot better, Hunter Dozier's been below 150, which he's going north of. And I think his last 8 or 9 hits have been extra base hits, which is outstanding. So he's slowly coming out of it. But you have guys like Whit Merrifield who was getting a little impatient there. And I think just the offensive inconsistencies, because, again, it's great that they had that great road trip stretch where Salvi single-handedly 3 games won it by himself almost. So you have situations where you have to realize you can't rely on that. And sometimes you just got to try to bunt to get on. You got to force yourself to go the other way. You've got to do something different. And right now, if the pitching stinks and the offense stinks, you're going to lose. If the pitching is good but the offense stinks, you're going to lose. Because you could pitch poorly and the offense could score 10 runs and bail you out of it. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't work the other way around usually. And so I think that this offensive struggle is a big question mark and could really, really hurt the Royals if they don't figure that out.
What are your thoughts on the bullpen? I mean, we've got a lot of hard throwers, and really I thought that would be a strength of this team. They have, I believe it's the 4th worst ERA either in the league or in the majors, although I think that can be misleading at times as well because sometimes games get away and you got guys. I know there's one game where Greg Holland just had to suck it up and go out there and pitch and finish it out because they had exhausted their bullpen. How do you see the bullpen? Oh, I think we lost Les there. Something happened with Les. We'll see if we can get him back. He just disconnected or maybe accidentally hit a button. So I'll see if we can get Les back, and we'll pick up where we left off there coming up here in just a moment on the Sports Ticket. All right, we reconnected with Les Norman, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. And before I interrupted there, Les, we were talking about the bullpen, that the Royals have had some guys that have had to go out there when the bullpen's been exhausted at times, and it doesn't help when your number one pitcher, Brad Keller, has a lot of short outings. Mike Minor hasn't really gone deep into ball games either. But what about the bullpen and how it's constructed, and is that a concern for you right now with this team?
It is a concern. Example I would use would be a guy like Barlow, who's been, you know, lights out for a while, and it's almost like when one guy who's normally steady can't find the zone, and so he pitches a little bit differently, and now he's over the middle of the plate, the big league hitters start to hammer him. Well, then the next guy tries to do too much, and the next guy tries to do too much, and, you know, you get that inconsistency. And so it's usually you might have kind of a half split where you'll have some guys doing well, some guys aren't doing well. I mean, it's a big league bullpen, and, you know, the law of averages will tell you that at some point there's a go-to guy, and it's just been a little bit rough right now. So, look, you can't live over the middle of the plate, and it seems to me, and watching these games both for starters like Brad Keller and for some of the bullpen, you have to have command, which they have not. And even in the zone, they're right over the middle of the plate and getting hit hard. I don't know if you have the stat in front of you. I certainly do not. But what I would like to see is, and what I think would be big, is the hard contact rate.
Yeah.
Not just the hits and the runs and the ERA, but I think it would probably be pretty high, because one of the things I watch is when I'm watching pitchers, whether it's starters or bullpen guys, are they hitting the corners? Are they mixing their speeds well? Are they pitching backwards? Are they willing to use their breaking ball or their changeup on the front side of the at-bat versus, you know, the traditional fastball, curveball, changeup kind of thing? And you can't do those things if you're not throwing strikes. And if you're not throwing strikes, you're forced to go to your fastball more. If you go to your fastball more, then you're liable to be over the middle of the plate. So location and just that consistency of command has been really been a struggle.
The starting rotation, I know we look to the future and how good this rotation possibly could be. When you look at Singer, should he be here for a while? If Keller figures things out, which I think he will. I mean, he's only 25. He's proven that he can pitch in this league. You've got two young guys there. Lynch now is in the rotation. You've got Cower, you've got Lacy, you've got others coming up. Now, you can't count all of them to hit. Maybe they all end up being 3, 4, 5 starters instead of a 1 or a 2, although Brady Singer has shown at times that he could be a number one guy. But Duffy, as you mentioned, has pitched very well. Minor, to me, is kind of a fill-gap measure until another younger pitcher is ready to go. What were your two-part question here? One, what are your thoughts on the rotation now with Lynch in it and Junis to the bullpen? And then two, what are your thoughts on Lynch and how he performed that first night, and what do you think about his future?
Well, with Lynch, I feel like what I saw, I mean, it wasn't, everybody loved the new kid coming up and his own fan club in a suite, and, you know, he only gave up 3 runs, but he gave up a lot of hard outs there. So it wasn't like, people have to understand, keep their expectations in check, where he made some mistakes. He does throw hard, but his fastball's straight. So he still has to learn command, but his changeup and slider are outstanding. So it does give you hope. He did have a good amount of strikeouts. His pitch count was strong. So I think it's a really good future for him. I think Junis eventually will come back into the rotation. I think you really did a good job of saying, you know, Minor is kind of a stopgap guy until one of these younger guys are ready. I think Lynch has a bright future. I think that his stuff was exceptional. Again, I think if he would have had someone besides Salvi back behind the plate, that might have gone different in a bad way, because Salvi can calm anybody down and can call great games, and obviously he's, in my opinion, the best catcher in baseball. So that contributes to a guy like Lynch being good. I'm impressed with it. I'm not overly to the point where, oh, finally, we've got our big ace. He still has a lot of work to do, but there were a lot of positives that came out of it, and I think Junis eventually will come back into the rotation.
Adalberto Mondesi is a very exciting player to watch, and he's been up and down in his career. It seems like when he just starts to get going, he has some type of nagging injury. Of course, he was terrific at the end of last season in the shortened season due to COVID. At the beginning, he was really abysmal at the plate. I mean, he's still only 25, and he could be a superstar. He's shown those flashes. You know, I Danny Duffy, to me, over his career, has shown those stretches where you're like, man, this is a guy that could win the Cy Young. But he hasn't been able to put it all together. And this year, he's had a stretch where he looks like he could be a Cy Young candidate. What are your thoughts on Mondesi? Is he a little bit just kind of jinxed with some of these injuries? What have you seen with him during the shortened season? I know you didn't have a real off season. Some people can use that as an excuse. But, I mean, he's such a great player to watch when he's clicking and what he brings to this offense.
Agreed. That, you know, he is talented and has incredible potential. The problem is that, I don't know if you call it snake bit, you know, just bad luck or whatever, but let's remember that his first at-bat was in the World Series at age 19. So this is kind of parts of his 6th or 7th big league season already. And even though he's only 24, 25 years old, he's still a veteran. And so at what point do we stop treating Alberto Mondesi like, oh, he's still a young kid who's, you know, he's got all this potential in the world. Okay, well, he's been hurt this year. So even if he has a good year, we don't even know when he comes back how long it's going to take him to get back.
Right.
Because, you know, it's going to be he's going to need some at-bats at the big league level. You can have a rehab assignment in AAA and get at-bats, which is good, but it's still not the big leagues. I mean, your best pitching is going to be in Kansas City where the big league team is, and obviously across the league. And so he's still unproven. You can have flashes of brilliance, and that's good. The idea is sustainable. And I don't need Adalberto Mondesi to be a superstar that everybody keeps talking about, because we already know he's an incredible shortstop. We already know he's an amazing base runner. He can switch hit. But I'm a student of the game as far as the hitting side especially goes, and so I watch guys' mechanics when they hit. He still has a lot of holes in his swing, even though he's been in the league that long. And so it's not a knock on him. I'm just not convinced, one, that he's going to be completely healthy. Number two, I'm not convinced that he's going to be able to figure it out right away. And I really want to caution Royals fans to understand that there really hasn't been a sustainable period of time mm-hmm. where he's proven that he's going to be healthy and be that big star, because we just haven't seen it. There hasn't been enough time for him to do that yet. And so I know they want to rush him back in, but sometimes those situations can be more disruptive when you've got kind of a good thing going. Now, again, like you said, Wade, that they've lost their last five. So you're not really disrupting anything if he were to come in now. But what if you got a good thing going and all of a sudden you get on a 7-out-of-10 streak and then you just put him in because he's your shortstop and it's time? That can mess your lineup up a little bit. And so, you know, 2 and 3 outs a game guaranteed as a guy starts to get back into it can be tough, because it offers less protection of some of your better hitters in the lineup.
This division, I mean, Cleveland now in first place, White Sox half game ahead of the Royals, the Twins off to a dreadful start this year, the Tigers are rebuilding. If the Royals don't win this division, who do you think is the best team or the team that would win this division at the end of the year? What's the biggest obstacle in the Royals' path in this division?
Well, it's the team that's in first right now. We knew that from the beginning. Mm-hmm. I mean, the White Sox have just kind of been quiet and haven't played up to their potential. They've had a couple of injuries, but their pitching is pretty solid. They've got a lot of good young hitters wrapped around veteran in Jose Abreu. You know, this staff they have has the potential to shut guys down for weeks, hitters down, teams down for weeks on end. And so Cleveland, we've seen, yes, okay, they're good. They've got some good hitters. Except for Bieber, I don't think their pitching is going to get them through as good as the Royals made them look over the last few games. Mm-hmm. But I think what it comes down to is that the White Sox are going to be the team to beat, and it could be as soon as early July before this whole thing is settled. Now, Cleveland might have something to do with that. They might say, hey, you know, we're not out of this thing. We're for real, too. But I think in the long run, it's going to be the White Sox and the Indians, especially if over the next month the Royals are still trying to figure out their pitching. I mean, you start to get the wind taken out of your sails if you're trying to win and come from behind every single game, especially, you know, the Royals. How many games have the Royals lost where they scored first and had a 3-0 lead, a 4-0 lead, and then end up losing late? So that plays in your mind all the time, because then you're thinking, well, we got to score 15 runs in the first 4 innings, so we're going to lose.
I agree with you. The White Sox would have been my answer as well. Albert Pujols, let's shift gears for a moment. He was released by the Angels. 667 career home runs. He's been a class act. He's been a leader. He was overlooked, obviously, in the draft by tons of teams that passed over him left and right. He was loved in St. Louis. He's respected and loved there. With the Angels. He was released yesterday. Is Albert Pujols, because of the fact that he is not flamboyant as some players are nowadays, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I love guys showing their emotions, and I think it's great for baseball that you have a guy like a Fernando Tatis. Maybe you're traditional and you don't like him flipping the bat, or you don't like him doing this or that, but for younger fans to try to draw them in with lots more options besides baseball, soccer is a growing sport, and other sports are as well. Albert Pujols, throughout his career, just went out and played every day. He was very durable and put up some amazing numbers. Is he maybe the most underappreciated, or I don't want to say underrated, but underappreciated star that you've seen in baseball?
I think he's maybe one of the most underappreciated by this generation.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he was so highly respected and appreciated by this the past generation that is almost ready to pass the torch on.
Yeah.
That, you know, I think that he has had more than his due. It's well earned, well deserved. I've loved watching him play. I love to watch him hit and do his thing. He's been an ambassador for the game. Never been any issues. He's led on and off the field. And the sad thing is that, you know, all good things have to come to an end.
Yeah.
And the last thing you want to do as a guy goes out is kind of the Michael Jordan thing. I mean, I grew up in Chicago. I love Michael Jordan. He's everybody will say either LeBron or Kobe or Michael Jordan. For me, it's Michael Jordan, of course, because of me growing up there.
Sure.
So, you know, Albert is, if you look statistically, if you look at respect and how you hold yourself, how you respect the game, how hard you play, how durable you are, showing up every day, you know, he's been one of the greatest players of his generation, maybe of the top 100 possibly of all time offensively. So I think, sadly, all good things do have to come to an end. I don't think he's underappreciated. I just think that it's probably time to pass the torch. And when you're making Albert Pujols money in the 10th year of a pretty big contract,
mm-hmm.
sometimes you just have to do it. Let's not forget this. Baseball is not a game of, well, we're going to go ahead and respect you and we're going to waste money.
Yeah.
It is a business of money. You make money and you have to make the right moves, and even the superstars of yesterday have to come to terms with the fact that sometimes it's time to go and time to hang it up or move on. And you know, it's not disrespectful. It's just business. And we can still honor Albert Pujols even in this current situation.
Amazing player. Amazing player.
No doubt. Amazing and more of an amazing man.
Yes, absolutely. Time for an off the wall. By the way, what do you think about that real quickly in regards to the competition now for baseball? I think we've talked about this a lot on our show. Major League Baseball, the average viewer of baseball now is 60 years of age. The average viewer of soccer is 40. And I know the younger generation, talking to my son and other kids, and my son plays baseball. But of all the sports he plays on a regular basis, baseball is the one he likes the least. And he says to me, it's just, you know, you stand around a lot. You know, he likes to go. Now, other kids love baseball, don't get me wrong. But what about the future of Major League Baseball in regards to making some rule changes? Now we have seven-inning doubleheaders, which some people aren't happy about that. Traditionalists certainly aren't. Some people don't like the runner at second base to start the 10th inning. But nowadays, as we talked about, younger generation, their focus – they want things immediately, right? They're growing up with the smartphones and the technology, and so they can get the highlights in, you know, 2 minutes tidied up after a game and not have to sit through a four-hour baseball game. Then some of these baseball games, nine innings, last forever.
Yeah, I don't like these changes, but I am slowly coming to terms with the fact that this, again, I just said it, you know, I can't get against my own words. It's a business, and it is the generation, this generation's game. It's not the older generation's game. It's a different player. It's a different style. I think that these rules are, we've had, it's not about necessarily different ways to make the game better for me. It's that you played nine-inning doubleheaders forever, mm-hmm. you know, for 100 years. And, you know, if it were you change it every 15 or 20 or you're making small adjustments. But when you have all these deep-rooted traditions that go back into, you know, what, the 1800s and early 1900s, and now all of a sudden you're changing them, that's frustrating to me. And then you keep doing it over and over again and you keep meddling. That's frustrating to me. So I don't like the runner on second, but I know they're trying to get games moving along faster. I understand some of the reasoning behind it. And so it is frustrating for me personally, but I'm starting to understand that it's a new generation. It's a new game. And so I'll just enjoy the things that I like, the things that bother me. You know, I hate seeing a runner go out on second. But as soon as that first pitch is thrown in the top of the 10th, I'm back in, nobody out. You know, hey, move the runner over. I'll use their new rule, but keep watching with my traditionalist mindset.
What about Fernando Tatis, players that show that flair and have that emotion? I mean, you're a guy that obviously played years ago. Is that something that you've learned to kind of deal with, accept, embrace, or are you still cringe and go, man, that's not the way to go about it?
I would say the phrase probably deal with it, because again, it's not going to change.
Yeah.
And as soon as I voice it, I mean, we're in a generation where you can't disagree with anybody. I mean, there's no such thing as a civil debate anymore.
You're right. You're
you can't have a difference of opinion without someone saying they're going to block you or call you names or something like that. And, you know, there are so many things going on in the world where everyone's divided. Race is divided. Political parties divided. Socioeconomic statistics divides people. Faith divides people. It's unbelievable how, as humanity rolls on, we lose sight that we are all human beings and we should be loving each other. Mm-hmm. And so I deal with it on the baseball side. I don't like it. I don't think you show other people up. The fact that you just hit a 450-foot home run should be plenty enough to know that you just got a guy. Mm-hmm. And if you want to jog a little bit slower, okay, no problem. But the bat flip and the signs from the bases, never liked it, never will like it. I don't like watching NFL games where the whole, you know, a wide receiver catches a touchdown and the whole team has to run down and get in front of the camera and do some choreographed skit that they obviously practiced. Mm-hmm. It practiced just for this very thing. You know, I'm a guy that believes in serving other people. And when you drawing attention to yourself or doing something great is okay. But oftentimes, their feats of success and physical prowess shows that already. And when you purposely draw more and more and more and more attention to yourself, for me, it's just I would rather serve someone and sit in the background. But again, the game is changing. It has changed. You know, you take a guy like Trevor Bauer who says, hey, I'm a good pitcher and I gave up a home run. He should celebrate. If the pitcher's fine, okay, mm-hmm. That's between you two. I'll just look away until you cross home plate and then I'll just watch the next hitter. So, you know, I'm not a fan, but the game is changing, and so they do what they do. I'll do what I do, and I won't talk bad about someone because of it.
There you go. Time for the off-the-wall question. Best job in the world, in your opinion. Who has the best job in the world, in your opinion? And I'll give you my answer to allow you to think about this for a second. And it ties in with the show that you were on, Wheel of Fortune, which, of course, if you know, you could have definitely, you know, celebrated all kinds of ways on national TV. And sometimes that's who they want to get as contestants, you know, the flamboyant ones. That because if you just have somebody up there that doesn't even smile when they win a whole bunch of money, they kind of look at that as boring. So they go through auditions and everything else. If you don't know, folks, Les Norman was a contestant on Wheel of Fortune. To me, the person that has the greatest job in the world is Vanna White. I've said this for years, and I will continue to say it until she no longer holds the job. She has the greatest job. And this is not because it's not because I'm jealous. Okay, I probably am. But I have nothing against Vanna White. Seems like a lovely lady. You might have even talked to her when you were a contestant on Wheel of Fortune. I don't know. But she, I am jealous because I wish I had her job. She's got a great gig and there's a reason she's never given it up. So what's the best job in the world to you, my man?
Absolutely. You know, I remember in the morning, real quickly, in the morning, they were teaching us, you know, giving us the getting us out there, showing us how to spin the wheel because there's a certain way to spin it. And if you just pull and let go too soon, it'll bounce and it warps the wheel. And so you got to reach out, pull it to you, and then push it away from you. And I was the last in line of the big long line while they were talking to us and helping us get familiar with the studio. And this voice to my right said, wow, this looks really fun. And I turned and looked, and it was Vanna White carrying a stack of books, so Starbucks coffee, and I'm like, oh, wow, you don't see that every day. And she introduced herself, and I said, I know who you are, and this is really cool. And so I got to spend like a minute just talking to her even before all the show stuff started. So I definitely think that's probably a top three job for me would be Vanna White. I think that's a great call. For me, this is going to be a boring answer, but to be a professional athlete for me, mm-hmm. Because I love hard work. I love working my body, pushing my body to a point where you don't think you can push it. And to be able to see that success, even if it's fleeting, for me is awesome. I would say, though, the number one job for me, and this is the sappy answer, but the number one job for me that is the greatest in the world is probably being the husband and father to my family. I mean, when you raise kids and you see them grow up, and you know, my oldest son just got accepted into the nursing program, and to see their successes and the fruits of your labor as they grow up and see them go out into the world and love people and work hard and do well and come into their own, there's nothing more rewarding than that. So the job, I would say, is professional athlete. The title, I would say, would be husband and father.
Good answers. Well said. Good answers. By the way, if you want to know, Vanna White's been on Wheel of Fortune since 1982, Les. And at the age of 25, at the age of 64, she's still going strong. That means she's been on Wheel of Fortune for almost four full decades. And I say to as many as she can get, because that'd be okay. When she does the letter thing, does she actually touch it, or is it just like heat sensitive or something where she puts her hand in front and it changes? Do you know?
I believe she does actually touch it, but I think there's a little light that it'll come up.
Uh-huh.
But they have a little bit of an idea of what puzzles are going to come up.
Uh-huh.
You know, that like kind of a pre show.
Okay.
So I know that when I made it to the final round, I obviously didn't win the final round. But when I pulled, I think my wife was talking to someone, and when I pulled my card, which ended up being a $100,000 card, which is more sting to it. But I think there was a certain puzzle that maybe came up, right away after I pulled the 100,000. And I think that's what she said the guy was trying to say. There was like a guy that kind of worked at the back and was standing near the edge or whatever. But they have an idea of what's coming up, and you better be a good speller. So I think she actually has to make contact, but there's a little bit of a light that does it for her.
I remember the old days where she had actually had to turn them. She actually had to turn them. I mean, and I think there was even, I think there might have been a little video where it malfunctioned on her one time or something where she couldn't turn it. But it just, like I said, I think it's a great job. Les, let everybody know where they can follow your work, where they can get you online or follow your podcast, because as you said earlier, you're a busy guy.
Yeah, thanks, Wade. I think the main place is just lesnorman.com, and that's Les with one S. My podcast is just Breaking the Norm. Our other podcast, for those of faith, is The Watching World at Simplecast, and you can check that out. And then if you're in the Kansas City metro area, Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on ESPN Kansas City, which is 94.5 FM, and then Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. on Sports Radio 810, as far as Sports Radio 810 will reach. And so, but the best way usually is just if you're not in Kansas City and can't listen, you can just go to lesnorman.com, and it'll give you all the information.
Les, we always appreciate the time on the show, and best of luck in your recovery from knee surgery, and we'll talk to you again down the line. Thanks, man.
Thanks, man. I'll be stinking at kicking field goals anytime soon.
Yeah, sounds good. Les Norman, syndicated sports radio host, TV analyst, author, and motivational speaker. LesNorman.com is where you can check him out online, our guest today on The Sports Ticket.